Sometimes understanding life feels like trying to read this incredibly ancient, complex text. But what if that text isn't just chemistry, but actual code? Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into, well, the fundamental nature of life's information system. And we're guided by some really incredible insights, including from Dr. Minxiao Li's work in Genome Compass.
It's a fascinating perspective, isn't it? Framing everything from cells to, well, maybe even societal change through this lens of genetic information.
It completely shifts how you think about biology.
Totally. It stops being just, molecules bumping around. Suddenly it's instructions being processed, and it throws up these amazing questions right from the dawn of life.
Exactly. Questions that really jumped out from the sources and kind of sparked this whole exploration for us. Like, why DNA? Out of all the possibilities on early Earth, why did life choose that molecule to store its most vital information?
And then the alphabet itself?
Right. Why just four letters? A, T, G, C. Seems limited, doesn't it?
Compared to human languages, yeah.
And then there's that subtle thing. Why does RNA use a slightly different letter, U, instead of the T that DNA uses? Seems like a tiny detail.
But it's not random. None of these are quirks, really. Each one points to this ingenious solution that nature stumbled upon, or perhaps refined, billions of years ago. Solutions to fundamental problems of storing and transferring information.
It's like we're trying to reverse engineer life's original OS.
Pretty much, yeah, the original operating system.
And figuring this out isn't just, biological triviaite fodder. It's about seeing the deep logic under everything. How a cell builds a protein, yes, but maybe even, as Dr. Li explores, how we understand complex systems like AI, or even glimpse future trends by looking at life's blueprint.
That connection is really thought-provoking.
So we think this deep dive is going to offer some surprising facts, maybe some real aha moments about the code that, well, defines us all. Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
So the sources kick off with this almost radical idea. The essence of life is fundamentally information. Life is a self-replicating informational structure.
That's the core concept. I mean, think about it. Life needs instructions. It needs information to build itself, to maintain itself, to function.
Like software.
Exactly, like incredibly complex software. Cells need to know how to assemble proteins, how to divide correctly, how to react when things change around them. This isn't just happening by chance.
No way.
It requires a stable, reliable place to store the source code, if you like. And critically, a way to copy that code accurately. And that job, well, that molecule, that's DNA.
But back on early Earth, wasn't it just a messy soup of molecules, lots of stuff floating around? Why DNA specifically? The sources really suggest this wasn't just luck, it was like fundamental.
Right. It wasn't just any molecule would do. In that primordial chemical chaos, life needed something special, something that could copy itself, or at least serve as a template for copying.
Replicability.
That's the key. And the RNA world hypothesis is, well, it's pretty compelling here. The idea is that RNA probably came first. RNA is amazingly versatile. It can store information, and it can act like a primitive enzyme, catalyzing reactions.
So it could potentially do both jobs, store the info and help copy it.
Potentially, yes. It was likely a huge step towards life as we know it, a molecule that could replicate.
But RNA had a flaw, right? A big one for long-term plans.
A critical one, yeah. As the sources really emphasize, RNA is just much less stable than DNA. It's usually single-stranded, much more vulnerable to breaking down from heat, UV light, various chemicals.
Not great for keeping the family secrets safe for generations.
Exactly. For the quick, temporary jobs inside a cell, fine. But for carrying the entire genetic blueprint of a species across millions, even billions of years, it's just too fragile. Life needed something tougher, a real long-term memory system. And that turned out to be DNA.
So DNA wasn't an accident. It was selected, evolutionarily speaking, because its structure was just inherently better for that archival job.
That's the argument. Through countless cycles of chemical evolution and selection, the molecule with the best properties for stable, copyable information storage won out. And the sources break down why DNA is so good at this.
Okay, what are the key features?
Well, first off, stability, that double helix structure, it's physically strong and it protects the precious bases tucked away inside. It's just way more resistant to damage than RNA.
Like building a vault for your most important data.
A really sturdy vault, yeah. Second, replication. The way the bases pair up A always with T, G always with C, that's the genius part. When the two strands unzip, each one acts as a perfect template to build a new partner.
So the code itself dictates how to copy it accurately.
Pretty much, yes. It's baked into the structure. Third, mutation allowance.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting. DNA copying is incredibly accurate, but it's not perfect. Small errors, mutations do happen.
Which sounds bad.
It can be for an individual, but for a species, it's essential. The error rate is low enough to keep the main instructions intact, but just high enough to introduce variation. That variation is the raw material for evolution and adaptation.
So it needs to be stable, but not too stable. Allow for tweaks.
Exactly. A delicate balance. Fourth, dense storage. This just blows my mind every time. The sources state that one single gram of DNA can theoretically store over 215 petabytes of information.
Wait, say that again. 215 petabytes?
Petabytes. That's hundreds of thousands of typical computer hard drives worth of data in 1 gram. Think about how much complexity that lets you pack into a microscopic cell nucleus. It's unbelievably efficient storage.
That efficiency allows for complex organisms without the instruction manual being bigger than the organism itself.
Precisely. And finally, modular language. Just 4 bases, reading groups of 3 codons give you 64 possible words. That's more than enough to specify the 20-odd amino acids needed to build basically all proteins, plus signals for starting, stopping, regulating. It's a simple alphabet that creates a vast biological dictionary.
Wow. So put it all together. DNA isn't just some random molecule. It's like the language of life. Nature's optimal design for efficiency, copying, and evolving. The source called it life's original operating system.
Yeah, I like that analogy. And there's another really profound point the sources bring up about why information storage evolved. The initial driving force might not have been survival in the sense we usually think of it. It might have been purely about replication. Life didn't necessarily store information to survive better first. It stored information so it could be copied. The information needed a format that allowed duplication.
Life didn't store information to survive, but stored information to be copied. That does reframe things.
It aligns with ideas like the selfish gene, the genes built vehicles, organisms, to help them get copied more effectively. DNA was the perfect format for those copyable instructions. It's the core algorithm, the first sentence, if you will, of this replicating structure.
And the cell is just constantly running this program.
Constantly executing the code. DNA gets transcribed into RNA. RNA gets translated into proteins. Information execution happening trillions of times a second in your body right now. It's biochemical computation.
And those tiny copying errors, the mutations, that's the engine driving diversity and change.
That's it. It allows for this constant renewal, this shuffling and recombination of genetic information across generations. That's how species adapt. Without mutation, evolution would grind to a halt.
It's just incredible that this ancient code, billions of years old, is still running the show in us. And now, as the sources point out, we are starting to read it, understand it, even rewrite it.
The OS is becoming self-aware.
Yeah. Which leads to that kicker question the source ends with. We are now a life form that understands information. So what information will we leave behind? Heavy stuff.
Deeply resonant, especially now.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Let's dig into the alphabet itself. The sources pose that other big question. Why just 4 letters? A, T, G, C. Why not simpler, like 2? Computers manage fine with binary. Or why not more complex, like 6 or 8 letters? More options.
Yeah, it's a great question because it forces you to think about the competing demands on this system. It's not just about biology. It touches on information theory, biochemistry, evolution. It's a balancing act.
The comparison to computer binary is useful. 2 states, 0 and 1. DNA uses 4.
And that difference has a massive impact on information density, how much information you can cram into the same length of code. Let's look at the numbers the sources use.
Okay.
With just 1 position, binary gives you 2 options. Quaternary, or 4 bases, gives you 4. Okay, twice as much.
Just full enough.
But now look at 2 positions. Binary gives you 2 times 2, which is 4 combinations. Quaternary gives you 4 times 4, 16 combinations. Already 4 times denser.
It grows exponentially.
Exactly. 3 positions. Binary is 2 cubed, 8 possibilities. Quaternary is 4 cubed, 64 possibilities, 8 times denser. Go out to just 10 positions. Binary gives you 2 to the 10th. That's 1,024 options. But 4 bases, 4 to the 10th. That's over 1 million possibilities.
Wow. 1,048,576.
Right. So 4 bases pack vastly more information into the same space compared to 2. It's hugely more efficient for encoding the sheer complexity needed for life.
Okay, so that explains why not 2. But then, the flip side. If more letters mean more density, why stop at 4? Why not 6 or 8? Wouldn't that be even more efficient?
Ah, but here's the trade-off. There's a major constraint. Errors during replication.
More letters, more chances to mess up.
Precisely. Think about it. Computers achieve near-perfect copying with binary using electronic means, but DNA replication is a physical chemical process done by enzymes. They have to recognize and pair up molecules.
Okay.
While some errors are good for evolution, as we said, too many errors would just scramble the essential genetic instructions. It would be catastrophic. More base types would significantly increase the potential for mistakes.
It gets too complicated for the copying machinery.
Fundamentally, yes. The enzymes that read and copy DNA are optimized for distinguishing between four shapes. If you suddenly introduce 6 or 8 very similar molecules, the rules for pairing become much more complex. It's harder to ensure A pairs only with T, G only with C, X only with Y, Z only with W.
The specificity breaks down.
It could. It might make the pairing less stable, and it definitely makes the job harder for the polymerase enzyme to grab the right base quickly and accurately. The chance of putting the wrong letter in goes way up.
So four letters seem to be this delicate balance point.
That's exactly how the sources frame it. It's an optimal solution found by nature. Enough information capacity for complexity, but simple enough chemically and structurally to allow for stable, accurate enough replication by enzymes, and crucially, still allowing that small, manageable error rate for evolution.
And the accuracy hinges on that very specific pairing rule. A with T, G with C.
Absolutely. And that pairing isn't arbitrary, it's based on chemistry. Specifically, hydrogen bonds. A and T form 2 hydrogen bonds between them. G and C form 3.
Oh, right. I remember that.
That difference in bond number and the specific shapes of the bases mean they fit together perfectly, like puzzle pieces. GC pairing with 3 bonds is actually stronger than AT pairing. That's why regions of DNA rich in G and C are more stable, harder to melt apart with heat.
That's a neat detail.
And this strict complementarity is the foundation of accurate copying. Enzymes like DNA polymerase literally feel for the right shape and hydrogen bonding pattern before locking a new base in place. They even have proofreading functions they can back up and fix a mistake if they make one.
It edits itself as it goes. Amazing.
The source calls it self-correcting fidelity. We also have to think about, well, could these molecules even exist and be made on early Earth?
Chemical feasibility.
Right. The 4 bases we use, adenine, thymine, guanine, cytosine, they're chemically suitable. They have stable ring structures. They can do the hydrogen bonding. They dissolve in water. And importantly, experiments suggest that molecules like these could have been synthesized from simpler chemicals under the conditions thought to exist on the early Earth. Think Miller-Urey type experiments.
So they weren't just good on paper. They were actually available in the primordial soup, potentially.
That's the idea. Evolution didn't invent them from scratch. It likely selected the best options from what was chemically possible and stable back then. The sources argue they were the most stable and reproducible way to encode information that emerged.
But haven't scientists tried to, like, expand the alphabet in the lab? Create artificial DNA?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's a really exciting field, synthetic biology. There are labs, like the one at Scripps Research, that have successfully engineered bacteria with extra artificial base pairs, often called X and Y. So they have 6-letter DNA that can technically replicate.
Ooh, so it is possible. Life could have used more letters.
In a controlled lab environment, yes, it shows the principle isn't impossible. But, and it's a big but, the sources highlight major limitations with these artificial systems.
Like what?
Well, for one, replication efficiency is often much lower. The natural DNA polymerase enzymes aren't designed for these new letters, so copying is slower and potentially more error-prone. Also, the chemical structures of these artificial bases might be less stable, or they might not use hydrogen bonds in the same robust way as A, T, G, and C.
They don't really fit in smoothly with the rest of the cell's machinery.
Exactly. The whole system, replication, transcription, translation, repair mechanisms, it's all evolved over billions of years around the natural 4 bases. Throwing in new ones can cause conflicts, gum up the works, and outside the carefully controlled conditions of the lab, these artificial systems probably wouldn't survive the pressures of natural selection.
Okay, so the experiments are cool. They show it's not the only theoretical possibility, but they also kind of reinforce why A, T, G, C were likely the optimal choice, at least here on Earth.
Precisely. It supports the idea that our 4-letter code is the most effective solution given the specific chemical and environmental constraints life faced here. It also opens up fascinating questions for astrobiology, right? Could life on another planet with different chemistry have evolved a different genetic code? Maybe 5 letters. maybe something entirely different.
Mind-bending stuff. So, wrapping up this part, the four-letter system hits that sweet spot. Good information density, high replication accuracy, chemical stability and feasibility, and just enough error for evolvability.
Yeah, the sources put it beautifully. If less than this, information cannot be contained. If more, information is lost. Life picked the language with the most perfect resolution in between. Elegant.
Truly elegant. Okay, one final piece of this puzzle from the sources before we finish. That small nagging difference. DNA uses thymine, T, but RNA uses uracil. Why bother with that tiny change?
It seems so minor, right? Just swapping one letter. But again, it's a really clever bit of biological design with important consequences. Chemically, the difference is tiny. Thymine is basically uracil with an extra little tag, a methyl group, CH, stuck on.
And that little methyl group makes a difference.
It makes two key differences. First, that methyl group adds a bit more chemical stability to thymine compared to uracil. It makes the molecule slightly more resistant to damage. For DNA, the long-term permanent archive, that extra bit of stability is valuable, helps preserve the code.
Okay, so T is just a bit tougher, better for the main blueprint. Makes sense.
Right. But the second reason is arguably even more critical, and it's all about error detection. This is explained really clearly in the source.
They're like, lay it on me.
One of the other DNA bases, cytosine C, has a tendency to undergo a chemical reaction called deamination, especially in water. And when cytosine gets deaminated, guess what it turns into?
Uh-oh. Let me guess. Uracil.
Bingo. Cytosine naturally decays into uracil. This is a common type of DNA damage that happens spontaneously.
So a C in your DNA can just randomly turn into a U.
Yes. Now think about this. What if DNA normally used uracil, U, as one of its standard four bases instead of thymine T?
Okay.
If a cytosine C decayed into a uracil U, the cell's repair machinery would look at that U and have no idea if it was supposed to be there, a normal U base, or if it was actually a damaged C that needed fixing.
The error would be invisible.
Yeah.
Because U would be a legitimate letter.
Exactly. The cell couldn't distinguish a mutation from a correct base. But because DNA only uses thymine T...
any uracil found in the DNA sequence must be wrong.
Yeah.
It must have come from a damaged cytosine.
Precisely. Any U found in DNA basically screams, error, I used to be a C. And life has evolved specific repair enzymes, like one called UDG, uracil DNA glycosylase, whose job is literally to span the DNA, find any stray us, snip them out, and allow the machinery to put the correct C back in.
Wow. So using T instead of U in DNA is a built-in proofreading system specifically for catching that common C to U damage. That's brilliant.
Isn't it? The source calls it a survival strategy to maintain the integrity of the genetic archive across generations. Using T provides a clear, unambiguous signal for a very common type of error, allowing it to be efficiently repaired.
Okay, that makes perfect sense for DNA, the permanent archive.
Mm-hmm.
But why does RNA still use U? Why not just use T everywhere for consistency?
Good question. It comes back to RNA's different role. Remember, RNA molecules like messenger RNA, mRNA, are mostly temporary copies. They're made when needed, used to direct protein building, and then they get broken down relatively quickly.
They're disposable messages, not the forever archive.
Exactly. They're transient players in the cell.
Mm.
For these short-lived molecules, that little bit of extra stability that T provides isn't really necessary. And importantly, making uracil is biochemically simpler and cheaper. It requires less energy for the cell to synthesize U than T because of that extra methyl group on T.
Ah, so for RNA, it's about speed and saving resources.
Pretty much. RNA production prioritizes speed and resource efficiency for its dynamic, temporary roles in information transfer and processing. Why spend the extra energy making T for a molecule that's going to be recycled soon anyway?
So it really is a smart division of labor. DNA gets the stable, high-fidelity T for the archive, and RNA gets the cheaper, perfectly adequate U for the quick messages.
That's it. I love the analogy the source used. DNA is the composer of life. RNA is the improviser playing that score within the cell. One is preserved forever. The other lives and moves in the moment.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And the source has even hinted that this tiny TU difference and the related C to T changes, when that U repair fails or happens on the other strand, connects to bigger things like epigenetics, aging, cancer.
Absolutely. That methyl group on thymine is actually related to methylation patterns used in epigenetics to turn genes on or off. And C to T mutations are very common in aging and many cancers. So this seemingly tiny chemical difference is actually a fundamental switch involved in gene regulation, genetic diversity, and even disease. It's amazing how these molecular details ripple outwards.
Wow. Okay. What a journey we've been on. We've really unpacked a lot here, looking at life as fundamentally an information system.
Yeah, and then exploring the genius behind choosing DNA as the stable archive molecule.
Understanding why that four-letter code hits the sweet spot for efficiency and accuracy.
And finally, seeing the functional brilliance behind that seemingly minor T versus U difference between DNA and RNA.
It's just remarkable, isn't it? How these deep principles of chemistry, of information theory, are just woven into the fabric of every living thing, from a bacterium right up to us.
It really gives you a sense of the incredible depth of life's evolutionary history and just how sophisticated nature's engineering is at the molecular level.
And hopefully, for you listening, this dive into the code itself reveals some of that deep logic. It connects back to that bigger perspective, maybe from Dr. Lee's work too, seeing life, maybe even our own choices through this lens of information. We've really explored the code that life chose to be.
Which brings us right back around to that powerful final thought from the sources. We as humans are now at this point where we can not only read this code, but understand it and even begin to rewrite it.
Yeah.
Now that we, this particular life form, understand the operating system, what does that mean for the future of life itself?
What information will we choose to encode? What responsibilities come with that power? Definitely something profound to think about, reflecting on life's original elegant code.